Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, I'm Brandy, and my husband Douglas and I host That Dead Body Show.
We talk about dead bodies, murder, the victims, and those that just play the victim.
All with the sarcastic, foul-mouthed, dark humor that you'll come to love us for. Or not. Even if we talk over each other sometimes.
Jinx. Download us with your favorite podcatcher, and find us on all social media at That Dead Body Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. We are trying a new recording system today for everybody who's listening.
So if it's terrible, you might hear a different episode, or you might have to redo it. But if not, then this is it.
And hopefully this will be easier for Nico to do. Sorry for our absence last week.
I
was a little under the weather, and Cam kind of needed a little break, so it kind of worked out. So what you got for us today, Camille?
What I have for you today, let me give you this little passage, and you try to guess where it's from.
Okay.
Welcome to Hollywood. What's your dream? Everybody comes here. This is Hollywood, land of the dreams. Some dreams come true, some don't, but keep on dreaming. This is Hollywood. Always time to dream, so keep on dreaming.
That, my friend, is from Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman, walking down the street. You're the singer, really. You're supposed to take it from there, but, you know. Yes, it is. And when I was writing this little story or researching it or whatever, that's what I kept thinking of, because this plays that story pretty close. Small town girl moves to LA to try to become famous and doesn't quite work out.
Right. I think that happens to a lot of people that go to LA.
I think there's so many people that go to Hollywood, you know, and they're trying to just become famous, like the next Marilyn Monroe or whatever. And the competition is so fierce that, you know, it just doesn't happen. And that's what the story is about.
Oh, I agree. All right, let's hear it. What you got?
Okay. So this is a story of Vicky Morgan. And Vicky Morgan was a beautiful, beautiful girl that ended up growing up in California. But we're going to go back. We're going to take you back and tell you about... Going to go back and tell you a little bit about her upbringing.
Okay.
So Vicky's mom was named Constance Laney, and she was the daughter of a caretaker to the royal family's country home in Norwich, England. So Constance was also a very beautiful lady, and while she was over there in England with her family, she was British, by the way, she met an American airman, American military guy. He was an American military guy.
Gotcha.
Okay, and he was stationed over in England, you know, so the, you know how the forces go overseas,
right.
And a lot of times they meet people, they fall in love, and then they get married, so you kind of have the blended culture whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Air Force Airman was named Delbert Morgan. The two would begin this hot and heavy love affair. They ended up getting married, and she got pregnant and would be pregnant. It would turn out with cute little Vicky. Well, seems that Delbert Morgan kind of had a wandering eye and started having an affair when Vicky was still in her mama's belly. Okay.
Ooh,
so Constance was still pregnant while he was having an affair. Shortly after the birth of Vicky, the couple would end up divorcing, and Constance Laney would then pack up her two small kids, go back to England. You know, she'd come over to the States to be with them. So she took her kids back to England to have her parents kind of help raise them and things like that. They only stayed over there for about 2 years, and she decided she wanted to make a go of it, packed those kids up again, and she came back to the States, and they landed in Colorado. So things were looking up for Constance Laney, and she would meet this man named Ralph Laney. Now, Ralph Laney, that would be her name, where she got that from. I'm not sure what her maiden name was before that. She would meet this man named Ralph, and he was a tool and die maker. And, you know, he had a pretty good job. He was a foreman's job in a tool and die factory.
Right.
And he married her. He was, you know, he was a good guy. And he decided to move the family to Montclair, California. They would go on to have two more kids, two boys named Patrick and John. Now, kind of in a freak accident, or not, I guess it's not a freak accident. It's just a sad accident. The bliss and the happiness that the family had living, you know, as they had always kind of dreamed of, was shattered. One afternoon, while the family was dining at the local Tasty Freeze, remember Tasty Freeze?
I do remember the Tasty Freeze.
Ralph suffered a major heart attack in the car, and he would die just a few hours later.
Ugh, that's awful.
That's horrible, right? But what's even worse is that he had let his life insurance
lapse. Oh, no. That's horrible.
Just the day before.
Ugh. That's
just the day.
The day before?
The very day before the accident. You would think that the insurance would honor that, but I guess
no,
not.
No, they won't. No. Nope, that's
kind of terrible.
That's very terrible.
So here's the family, and they're stuck. Constance has Victoria and her little brother, and then the two boys that she had had with Ralph. And she's kind of struggling to figure out what to do. Well, Constance knew just how beautiful her daughter Vicky was from the very start. And she decided that she was going to sign Vicky up for some modeling. Modeling, you know, not the
easy
modeling that we think of. Yeah. Constance did sign her up, and she did get a few jobs, but not too many. Let's be honest. Come on now. At the same time, all this was going on, and I'm sure Vicky was dealing with a lot. She began to rebel and, you know, make bad decisions, as
a lot of
teenagers
do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Vicky at this time was looking for a way out, and that way out would come in the form of a little fella named Gary Haskell.
Oh.
Vicky at this time is 15 years old, and Gary would end up being her first true love, puppy love, but true love. Now, Gary was 19. He was rebellious, handsome, and dangerous.
Well, it sounds like he's dipping into that little jailbait.
Jailbait. Different time, but still.
But still, yeah.
Vicky was madly in love, okay? I got all this info from a book, and I'll give you the name of that towards the end. But long story short, and you're going to like this, Gary told her that they just had to have sex. And Vicky said, no, I'm only 15. So he breaks up with her, of course.
Oh, right? Yeah, yeah.
She's 15. He's 19. He's been around the block a few times, right? Soon he comes back, but this time he kind of talked her into it. She consented to have sex. And with it, she discovered something that she had never realized before, or I guess discovered before. And that was Vicky's ability to have power over men with her sexuality. And she is really gorgeous. You've seen a picture of her.
Yeah.
She's kind of got that classic beauty. You know, today what is so popular is big lips, big eyes, big, you know, big everything. And she had more of the dainty, smaller features that were popular in the 70s and early 80s.
When I saw a picture of her, she reminded me of Bailey from WKRP in Cincinnati. Just
yeah,
that
just kind of
a,
just a
the
simple,
girl next
kind of
door.
Pretty classic.
The beautiful girl next door, not like your everyday girl next door. Yeah.
Well, with discovering all this power that she now realized she had over Gary and other men, she also discovered something else, and that was that sex can lead to babies.
Babies. And babies aren't as Vicky fun as was, sex.
No, they're not. They last a lot longer, that's for sure.
Vicky
was 15 and a half years old and pregnant. Oh, and in 19, Lord. Can you imagine? And in 1968, no. What did you do with a girl that was pregnant that young? So they don't stick around, you know? So they shipped her off to St. Anne's, and this was a charity home for unwed mothers. Now, Vicky's father, he had always sent her money. He'd never really been a father figure to her. And
we call
so,
those sperm donors.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So when she had had this baby, he pretty much stopped talking to her, and that was it. She sent a letter to him after she had the baby, and it was a boy, and she named him Todd Morgan. He stopped talking to her altogether.
Wow, Todd Morgan. That's like a financial advisor's name, isn't it? Hi, my name's Todd Morgan. I'll be helping you with your 401k today. Doesn't it? Isn't that? Yeah. Doesn't that what? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
So I think anyway.
Sorry. Vicky and Todd would live with her mother, Constance, for, you know, the get-go, of course. She's 15 and a half, 16, having a baby. Now, Constance was a little embarrassed about this, so she would always claim that the baby was, in fact, hers, rather than her 16-year-old daughter's. The baby would, in turn, call Constance, who was her grandma, Mom, and call Vicky, Mommy. So it was Mom and Mommy.
Oh, okay. That's a little confusing, don't you think? Okay.
Plus, it's a little weird for, it's a little weird. I don't know. I mean, she's six, I guess, again, different time, but still right. 1968.
Yeah.
I mean, people have
I would think that would be more for the outside folk more than for the kid.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I
like
agree.
If you're at the grocery store. Yeah.
Could you imagine Mom, Mommy? What?
Yeah.
So during this time, Vicky's struggling to make ends meet, and she lands a job as an usher at the Grauman's Chinese Theater in Los Angeles. Do you know where that is?
I don't know exactly where that is, but that's right in front of where they have all the handprints of the stars and footprints and stuff. Yes.
She's a young kid, you know, she's enjoying all this newness. She's living in LA and all this stuff, right? It was not long after she was working there that she would meet and marry another guy, right? So Gary was the father to baby Todd, but they never, you know, got married. She continued to live with her mom.
Right.
So Vicky was working in Los Angeles, and she meets and would eventually marry a man who would, I guess he is the one that got her used to what she would come to do for the rest of her life. His name was Earl Lamb, and he was 48 years old when he met Vicky. There you go. So Vicky had learned using the sex, her sexuality, her femininity to have a little power over men. And Earl Lamb was the first guy that she started doing this with. Okay.
Right. She was a kept woman.
She wasn't even a woman. She was 16 when she met him, and they got married, ran off to Vegas, got married, 16, and he's 48.
Yeah.
After their wedding, it wouldn't be too long before Vicky would find out that, hey, married life's not quite what I thought it'd be. Shocker. Vicky. It's not. There was a few other things that she learned about Earl that, you know, at 16, you wouldn't know. And that was that Earl liked a little, he liked things a little on the freaky side in the sack, a little freaky in the sacky sacky.
Yeah.
He encouraged and wanted her and he to participate in orgies.
Okay.
He liked to watch her with other men. She would also be with other women, and he liked to watch all of this. So she's 16 years old and she's doing all this. Well, in turn for doing this, he gives her a Cadillac Seville.
Oh, okay.
She's no dummy, Jen. She goes and exchanges that Cadillac for a Mercedes.
Well, of course, because who wants to drive a Cadillac?
That's what
your
I was
thinking.
Your
dad drives Cadillacs.
You're 16.
You're
right?
16. You're going to want a Mercedes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Lord.
Won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz?
Nice. Vicky also was given a credit card with no limit. All the clothes she could ever want. Okay. Vicky, you know, she liked this life for a little while. She soon turned 17, and, well, she's kind of getting bored.
Well, duh, yeah.
Right? So her and her girlfriends would go to Los Angeles, and they would cruise the Sunset Strip. And they started mingling with all the actors and directors and all the people that were making it in L.A. Earl, of course, being 48, was not too happy with all the time she was spending out and about and doing all this. And he didn't really know what she was doing. But one night when she came home, she realized just how unhappy he was with her. And he showed her how unhappy he was with her with his fist.
Oh.
So he beat her up. The marriage obviously started to crumble. And Earl would remain hopelessly, horribly, and desperately in love with Vicky. They would not yet divorce, of course, but they were still together, but in name only. Okay.
Too bad she just didn't leave his ass.
So she's kind of doing her own thing now. And, you know, she had been used to all the sweeter things in life. Mm-hmm. And she's back to herself now, right? She's struggling to get by. She's only making a little bit of money with hostess jobs here and there. And, you know, some of her modeling gigs, she was posing for a few sessions, some print ads, but not enough to either get famous or make a lot of money, which I guess you kind of need both. They kind of go hand in hand. So she's still 17. She's, you know, just kind of hanging out in L.A., trying to figure out what she's going to do with her life and all that stuff. So she had made plans with one of her friends to meet for lunch at a restaurant called the Old World Restaurant. Okay. Uh-huh. So they were going to meet there, celebrate all that stuff. So Vicky was notorious.
Just celebrate
life, celebrate lunch, you know, being a kid, being in L.A., just kind of hanging out. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're 17, everything's a celebration, Jen, or so I hear. I'm not sure. I can't remember that far back.
No.
So she goes to the restaurant. She's notoriously late, and for once, she's actually early. So she goes into the restaurant and looks around. Her friend's not there. And so she notices that this guy is like staring at her. He's an older guy. Well, you know, she kind of likes that attention from the older guys because the attention equals money, whatever.
Right.
And frankly, she was kind of used to it. So she notices that this guy's staring at her and all that stuff. So he comes over and he says, hey, would you please join me and my friend? And it was a lady friend that he was with. And just join us for a little while till your friend gets here. And Vicky says, you know, my friend's going to be here. But yeah, okay, I'll come down. So Vicky goes over and she sits down with him. And the lady that he was with, he didn't introduce her, but it was a lady. She would say that she kind of looked like a secretary or something like that. She was more formal. And like the way they behaved towards each other, it was more like a business relationship. So the man tells Vicky his name is Alfred. And he says to her, and this was his, what would you call it? His plea, I guess, to get her over there. His scheme.
His lie.
His boy. Yeah.
His line. His come on.
There you go. I thought you said lie because that would work too. Mm-hmm. But so he tells her, you know, my daughter, Lisa, she plays tennis. And I bet you two would be good together. You guys should play tennis together. Can I get your number?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. So she's nice. You know, he's an older guy. And she kind of blushes as she talks to him, but she says, okay. And she gives him her number. Her friend gets there. So she leaves him and she goes and has lunch with her friend. Upon leaving the restaurant, he goes over to Vicky and he hands her a piece of paper. Now, Vicky assumes it's his phone number, but, you know, she was wrong. And boy, was she way wrong.
Yeah.
She leaves the restaurant. She opens up the piece of paper and she is in utter shock as that piece of paper wasn't a phone number. It was a check written out to cash made for $8,000.
Holy cow, in 1970 something?
So remember, this is 1970, which would be around $51,000 today. Now, could you imagine going to a restaurant and getting
a piece of at 17 years old, too.
I can't imagine 51,000 today. I can't imagine 8,000 today.
I can't imagine 80.
There you go.
Yeah.
Some guy gives you $80. I would be happy for life. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'd be calling him.
Vicky goes home. She kind of sits on the check and she's thinking, you know, what's the deal? What's the trick here?
Mm-hmm.
She goes, she decides it's time to cash the check. So she goes and cashes the check. Well, she's not even home yet. Now, remember, there's no cell phones. And the phone at home begins ringing, right? So, I mean, it's the minute that that check was cashed, Alfred knew it. And he knew that was his connection. That was his chance to reach back out to her.
Mm-hmm.
So she,
that was the I'm interested. Yeah.
Yeah.
But or not the I'm interested as much as
you owe me.
Now you owe me. Yeah.
Exactly. He's very insistent. He's very nice. Vicky, at first, she tried to put him off, saying, you know, I'm really flattered. I'm just so honored that you would do this, but just this can't happen. This cannot happen. He is insistent upon this. Honestly, she's getting a little intrigued. Who's this guy? How does he have this much money? Like, what is the deal? And I got to be honest, I think I would at least go meet him for lunch.
Are you kidding me?
Who is this? Right?
Who is this? And how can I get more of that money? Yeah, that's what I'd be thinking.
So the last time he would call her, he invites her to lunch and he says, you know, it's just going to be a little lunch, nothing big. You don't have to do anything. And, you know, I'm going to have my friend. You met her the other night at dinner. She's going to go there. So it's going to be totally innocent. I promise you, the only thing that's going to happen is what you want to happen. She agrees to go. Little does she know that she's about to have lunch with one of the richest men in the United States.
Oh, wow.
Now she's 17, right?
So exactly.
There's no Google back then, Jen. There's no LinkedIn. You can't look people up. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't even know this yet. The man would turn out to be 53-year-old Alfred Bloomingdale. Yes.
Oh, of the Bloomingdales.
From that Bloomingdale.
The store Bloomingdales, in case people don't know what that is.
Bloomingdale was the beneficiary of the entire Bloomingdale retail dynasty.
That's amazing.
Bloomingdale, if you didn't know this, and I had no idea, he's also the person who invented, you ready for this, the idea of putting your purchases or your dinner or anything you want to buy on a piece of plastic.
Credit card.
He was the creator of the Diners Club, and that was the first credit card.
Was it a store credit card?
It's a Diners Club. He started at first it was food. I think you could like go to restaurants and they'd bill you, you know, so put it on my tab. The first put it on my tab, but it's really plastic and all
right.
that.
Gotcha.
Bloomingdale is rich, very mm-hmm. rich. He's very creative and he's also very married.
And he was also, honestly, he was not a very attractive man.
Well, he's a lot older. He's 53. So, you know,
but and when he was younger, he wasn't that attractive.
Oh, we're not going to do that, Jen. I mean, you don't know.
No, I've seen pictures, but when
I know, but we're
for
not
my taste,
be,
but
we're not going to be judgy, Jennifer. We're not going to judge people on their looks.
But at 17,
mm-hmm.
there's no way besides the money that it would have,
mm-hmm.
she would have gotten there.
Mm, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. Plus, and if he's just willing to give that to her willy-nilly, just because, $51,000, yeah.
Like, what? What's going to happen? I mean, exactly. Think about that.
I know. That's just rich, yeah.
Alfred Bloomingdale was married, in fact, as I stated, and he was married to a very prominent person. She was the daughter of a Beverly Hills doctor. Her name was Betty, or Betsy. They kind of are interchangeable because those are short for Elizabeth. Newley. And the two were wed way back in 1946.
So she's from money too.
Oh yeah. Yes. They were very well known, well to do, power couple, if you will. The couple lived in a sprawling mansion in Homely Hills, which is a suburb located right between Bel Air, California and Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. Now this is also where the Playboy Mansion was located. And if I'm not mistaken, it's also where Aaron Spelling's mansion was located. All of that was in this area.
And I think Will Smith moved there with his aunt and uncle, wasn't it?
He moved to Bel Air. Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm.
He did. Thank you, Jen.
You're welcome.
Alfred and Betsy would go on to have three children together. And, you know, I guess when you have that much money, because I don't know, and neither do you. You have so much money. Like I've always talked about this with my friends. You have so much money that you can do anything. So you're looking for excitement always, right? You're looking for something to give you excitement.
Right.
Because if you can buy anything, if you can have anything that you'd ever want at any time of the day or night, I mean, I would think that it would be hard to stay engaged. You know what I mean? Like thrilled, excited to do stuff.
Right. I agree.
Betsy, growing up from money, from the outside, she was the perfect wife. She was always very glamorously dressed. She always had the latest fashion. She would even, at this time, she had landed on the cover of several fashion magazines, which, I mean, this was, you know, the term supermodel didn't come till way later. So this is when they just put models or the well-to-do, I guess, you know, on the cover of magazines. They ran in social circles of the time with all these really well-to-do members of society. They were actually really good friends with Ronald and Nancy Reagan, the Reagans.
Mm-hmm.
And that would come up later in the story. They were a power couple, They were running a successful business. On the surface, of course, Alfred and Betsy looked like they had it all. But as is the case so often with people like this, they kind of maybe aren't so happy. And I bet you they have more than a few skeletons in their closet, shall we say.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All is not what it seems. And money, you can have secrets. And all that money does is just help you hide them a little bit better. But sooner or later, a lot of times, those secrets kind of come out, or exactly. The skeletons come out of the closet, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I do.
The spark between them had faded long ago, and Mr. Bloomingdale, you know, Jen, he just wanted what everybody wants in life. He wanted to be loved. He wanted to be
Is that so
cuddled.
Wrong?
And by loved and cuddled, I mean spanked, and by spanked, I mean hard and with a whip and
a little S&M, little BD,
you know.
Hey, to each their own.
That's right.
You know,
he had a very healthy sex drive. And honestly, he wasn't too picky with who he had relations with. He might be a woman. It might be five women at the same time. It might be a couple of women. In fact, it might be a couple of men. He kind of ran the gamut. But like
equal opportunity guy. Yeah.
But I think this goes back again to what I said. When you have money, you're it's just a different kind of life. You know, you're always looking for something to give you that adrenaline rush, I guess.
Or you're willing to take the chance. You've got all that money. Who cares?
Yes,
you can hide it. You can do whatever you need to do.
So this takes us to the fact that often we hear about very powerful people enjoying a little BDSM, you know? I think that has a lot to do with in these people, for instance, run these Fortune 500 companies. They're under a lot of stress, right? And when they're done, they kind of want that stress to be gone. And this type of play is supposed to release that stress, okay?
You know, to be beaten or to...
Either or, like just to have that. Betsy Bloomingdale would not engage in practices like this.
Oh, yeah.
So Alfred Bloomingdale would often visit prostitutes and escorts as well as dominatrix. Since he could, because he could afford it, he rented a little love shack. Well, actually, it's not even a shack. It's a mansion up in the Hollywood Hills to engage in this kind of play. Now, he enjoyed the rough play with prostitutes he hired. He would hire them for this purpose, right? And they would come, and I mean, he had all this to do. He didn't do this like once or twice a month. This was like several times a week, okay?
Oh, okay. So it was more than just a hobby. It was a lifestyle.
Yeah, kind of. But he had his lifestyle with Betsy, and then he had his nighttime lifestyle,
secret.
I guess?
His secret.
That's why I said he had the little secret. Alfred had been relentless in pursuing Vicky. He wanted more. He wanted more than that lunch. He wanted a lot more. So one night, he had talked her into meeting him for dinner, and he brought that lady along with him that had been on the previous lunch and that one time in the restaurant when they first met, okay?
The one that was like a secretary?
Correct. So this is the third time that they had met, and Alfred had said to Vicky, here's the deal. You're going to get in a car with Samantha. That's his personal assistant's name, shall we say? His friend, whatever.
His scout.
Yeah. There you go. Scout. Mm-hmm. She's a little more than that, though, because, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Well, she scouted the girls for him, right?
And she also had relations with them, too.
Oh.
And with them.
Gotcha.
But we'll get to that.
Gotcha.
So Alfred begs Vicky to just get in the car with Samantha and that she is going to drive her somewhere. He wants to show her her place, but also let her see more into him and his life. He is dragging her up there to seduce her, but it's not a one-time seduction. He likes her more than that, okay?
Gotcha.
So he wanted her to go with Samantha because that was his, if you don't feel comfortable, you can leave. I'm not with you. I'm not forcing you there. You're coming with Samantha.
Gotcha.
You have an out if you don't want to stay.
Okay.
So Vicky was really nervous as she goes to this house and she approaches the front door and the door opens and standing there is a platinum blonde pouring out of her top. I mean,
oh,
it's
nice.
Like, this is like the, you know, that 70s tight clothes, right?
Gold lamé pants.
You know the drill. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's how I envisioned it. Vicky enters the house and she makes her way into the living room and yet another woman is sitting on the couch. Same kind of style, shall we say, right? So she's like, what's going on? Samantha drove me up here. I come to this house. Correction, I come to this mansion. and there's these two over-the-top ladies in your house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Alfred enters the room, and he speaks to the two women. And when I say speaks, he kind of like snaps, you know, and they like disappeared. So it was kind of like he gave them the eye to like, yes, go away. Like, you're not needed. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
that
yeah.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Vicky's like, what the heck have I gotten myself into? And she's kind of panicking a little bit. Alfred approaches her and he says, so Vicky, do you know what a mistress is? Now, she is young. Remember, she's only 17. So, I mean, I guess that's a totally legit question to ask a young girl, right?
I guess, yeah.
He tells her that he would like her to be his mistress and that she would be taken care of for the rest of her life and never have to want for anything ever again. Okay,
that...
so she's kind of like,
yeah,
it's, you know, it's almost like child, I don't want to say child abuse, but like just this is weird, right? Like she's young and, but she liked that, you know, she kind of had that little inkling into it with Earl,
right?
Earlier.
That's, well, that's what
Alfred
she's
goes,
used to. Yeah,
that's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I just said. So Alfred goes on to say, well, here's the thing, Vicky. I have a little hobby, shall we say, and I'd like to partake in it at least a few times, if not several times a week. He says he would like her to participate in this, right? But if she doesn't like anything, if she gets nervous or anything like that, just tell him and it will never happen again. So he still hasn't really told her exactly what this is. Now, you and I, at our age, middle-aged women, even, I don't know, like 20, 21, 22, you probably think, okay, I know what's up. But at 17, I'm not so sure you quite have in mind what this hobby is.
Yeah.
Alfred takes Vicky by the hand, and he leads her upstairs to the bedroom, where Samantha and the platinum blonde, who is named Kay, were waiting. Okay, and they were in, they didn't have a whole lot of clothes on, let's put it that way.
Okay.
Alfred then asks Victoria to undress. Now, he's being smooth in all of this, right? Like, he's not, I mean, I guess he's not being creepy, but.
He's being creepy. She's 17, but yeah.
So Vicky does. She consents. She takes off her clothes. He proceeds to take a nylon cord and he ties up Samantha and Kay. And then he approaches Vicky and he sort of whispers in her ear and she agrees and she too is tied up.
Okay.
So at this young age and a failed marriage and a child, Vicky decides to take the offer and become Alfred Bloomingdale's mistress. I guess it was the nylon cords. I don't know.
You would think he could afford silk instead of nylon, but be easier on the wrists. Not that I would know, but anyway.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So at first, Alfred Bloomingdale just thought this would be kind of a passing fancy for him, right? That he would enjoy Vicky and that he went through a lot of prostitutes, a lot of escorts, and a lot of lady friends. Let's put it that way, right? Uh-huh. So he kind of in his mind thought that this would go that way too. But it soon becomes obvious that he's becoming obsessed with Vicky. Vicky's different, right?
She's 17.
Yeah,
he's different. Yeah.
Well, she's almost 18, Jen, fair. She's almost 18.
Oh, okay. That's better.
Mm-hmm. Now, you remember Alfred told her that she would never have to want for anything in her life if
Correct.
She would just be his mistress, right?
Uh-huh.
Alfred would, of course, promise to leave his wife. But Vicky, even though she was young and kind of naive, she knew that would never happen.
No.
Come on now. She also knew that as ruthless and powerful as Alfred was, there was just one person that Alfred was actually afraid of. And that would be...
his wife. His wife.
That is right. His wife. Betsy had, in the past, she'd always known of her husband's flings with hookers and, sex workers, and that he often hosted sex parties, that he would go from prostitutes to escorts, and he'd kind of have a lady of the day, you know, lady of the week, whichever one he's liking for that week, but it would go away. So she tended to always look the other way, right?
Well, and I'm sure she enjoyed it because she didn't have to put up with any of that, right? It
she
gave
was
her
more
the
into
chance
the,
to do
yeah.
the... her lady things besides
exactly being the social butterfly, social climbing and all that stuff. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that she liked that. Realizing that Vicky was more than just a passing fancy, she realized she needed to stop this. So she demanded that he stop all of the connections, anything and everything that he had with Vicky.
Mm-hmm.
He needed to stop it right away. In the past, when she would do this with prostitutes or anybody that he kind of liked for for that time. He had a trick. He'd throw money at her, buy her fur coats, jewelry. Hey, let me send you and your besties on an exotic vacation. And then she would go away and he would, you know, the cycle would kind of run itself and it'd be fine. He'd kind of, you know, it would get old. But this wasn't going to work with Vicky. I think he really cared for Vicky and he really was obsessed with Vicky. She was different, you know?
Right. And that was threatening to the Bitsy. Bitty, Betty, Buddy, whatever. Yeah. His wife.
Betsy.
Yeah.
You got name issues, girl.
I do have name issues. I've got a lot of issues, not just with names.
Me too, girl. I know. A few months have passed now of Alfred and Vicky seeing each other, and Bloomingdale had begun paying Vicky $1,000 allowance per month.
Wow.
But that soon changed to $5,000 per month.
Holy cow.
Which then soon turned to $10,000 a month. Bloomingdale rented a house for Vicky to live in, and the house came with a maid and a Mercedes Benz in the driveway. This is looking better and better, I gotta tell you.
I know.
Now, remember, she's not even 20 yet. She's still in her late teens at this time.
Okay? I
know. She's 18 by this time. Bloomingdale.
Hopefully she went and talked to Todd Morgan about, you know, putting some money away.
Her 401k. Do you get a 401k?
Your 401k lady? Mm-hmm.
As Alfred and Vicky continued to see each other, as it always kind of happens, their relationship seems to be getting out a little bit more. Like, they're starting to be a little bit more open about their relationship. People are starting to notice, and he's kind of okay with it, right? I mean, that tends to happen.
Well, she's a
little princess. Mm-hmm. Right. She's his princess, right? And she's being cared for, all this stuff. So they were meeting 3 times a week, and it was scary. It was fun. It was exciting at first, but it was turning into a real relationship when you start to have the demands that to see somebody, or you have to see them, or you want to see them versus then whatever, right? Alfred trusted her, and he actually listened to her with advice and just, you know, talking and stuff. And I'm sure Betsy, like I said, they had fallen apart long ago, right?
Right.
While all this was going on, mind you, she had never really divorced Earl. Good old Earl. They had separated, but not really divorced, okay? Alfred and Vicky had been seeing each other for some time, and Alfred has decided to ask Vicky to go on a business trip to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, with he and his partner. They were developing a hotel and resort. It must be nice to have so much money.
It is.
Vicky was like, you know, right? Thanks. I wouldn't know. Vicky said, you know what? I would love to go, but there's no way I can, because that would mean I'm away for a while and Earl will notice that, and that's going to be terrible. So Alfred says, hey, you know what? I got an idea. Let's pretend it's a modeling trip and I'm going to give you $10,000 in cash and you're going to give that to Earl. And, you know, I'm going to bring you down here and I'm going to pay for all that. And you're going to shop and play the day away while I'm working. And then at night we'll hang out. Again, seems pretty good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly,
I know.
She agreed, and they went on the trip and everything was great. When they returned from the trip one night, she was with Earl. Earl and Vicky were together. Earl had come over to see her in her big house. And, you know, it's funny because, like, I didn't Earl ever figure out, like, where'd you get this house? Like, what's going on? Whatever. Uh-huh. But I'm sure he kind of knew, but, you know.
Oh, he had to have known.
Right. They're in the house. The phone rings and it is Alfred. And Alfred says, I want to talk to Earl. Vicky gives him the phone and Earl goes into the bedroom. So she couldn't hear what they were talking about, but she picked up the phone in the other room to listen in. Now, does that sound like us? Remember when you could do that with the phones? You'd slowly put your finger on the dial tone thingamajigger and then pick it up and you could hear. That was awesome. Alfred Bloomingdale laid it all out and he asked just what it take to get rid of him forever. Get out of the picture.
Right.
Earl was furious and said he would not take a dime for the woman he loved. Guess what? It was over. Earl lost and Alfred had won. And Vicky and he could now be in peace. Didn't really say what happened. I'm going to say there's a lot of little money exchange because, come on, everybody has a price, right?
Everybody does have a price. Something. Exactly. He paid him off. It's that easy.
Exactly. Alfred then leased Vicky another house, and he would lease this one up on Sunset Strip. And it was right above the fashionable West Hollywood. It has lots of boutiques. It's very she. It's very nice, right?
Yeah.
He provided her with all the clothes she could ever want, furniture for the house. He provided her with a cook, a full-time housekeeper, and he gave her all the money she could ever need, want, or spend. And you know what? He told her to spend it. I kind of like Alfred. It's sounding better and better. In exchange for all this, Alfred demanded that Vicky learn proper social habits, such as being poised and graceful and all that stuff, so that she would be good eye candy or arm candy for his business associates. She was now officially his mistress, which meant he was now fully in control.
He was in control from the get-go. He had the money.
While he insisted she be a lady, one thing didn't change, and that was the weekly visits with several of the sex workers and the bondage sessions. You know, that I want an angel in the streets and a devil in the sheets. This applied nicely to the situation, right? Vicky was very adamantly against these, I guess, sessions he would do. Sometimes he'd surprise her and, you know, come home with just prostitutes and things like that. Well, then I think she kind of changed and she decided one day to surprise him for his birthday. She went out and she got a room full of sex workers to greet him when he got off work. It was his birthday after all.
Well, yeah. I mean, happy birthday. What else are you going to get a man who has everything?
Thank you.
That's his hobby, right? So what do you do?
More than a hobby, Jen. Vicky Morgan had anything and everything anyone could want, and at such a young age. But Jen, nothing's free. We all know that, right? Mm-hmm. Vicky couldn't do anything without Alfred's knowledge or approval. He wanted to know where she was, where are you going, who are you going out with? Like, he wanted to know every single thing. So all of this made her withdraw from her friends. It was just really hard to explain the setup that they had. Obviously, she couldn't date, and she was beautiful. What are you going to say? Oh, yeah, my 55-year-old lover / I don't even know, what do you call that? The opposite of your mistress. What do you call the boy version?
Well, she's,
boyfriend?
She's
not
the,
boyfriend.
Well, she's technically the he woman. Is.
But what is he, though? Like that,
he's her
that
sugar daddy.
Yeah, look that up.
He's her sugar,
sugar daddy.
Sugar
daddy. There you go. There you go. Thank you. I couldn't think of the name. She was Alfred Bloomingdale's lover, but she was also his prisoner. He had always promised that he would help her make it in, you know, L.A. Time was flying by. He wasn't doing anything like this. He wasn't helping her meet people. She was just trapped. She was a prisoner for him, right? And
well,
he was much older than her.
If he would have let her do all that, she would have lost her. So there's no way he was going to let her do that. Right now, it's kind of like being in a cult, right? You separate and you get them all to yourself. So,
right.
But she was young. She wouldn't have known any better, which is sad, but that's what happens.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
About this time that it's becoming very obvious to Betsy Bloomingdale that this little Vicky character, she's not going anywhere. And Betsy was very proud, right? She ran with a social circle that mattered. They were very well connected, and she could not have Alfred, you know, having this pretty young thing and doing all this. That's just not going to work for her, right? In her little circle. Although if you think about it, probably all of them had a little pretty young thing on the side at this time, right?
Oh, I would think so. But she's got to keep up appearances.
Betsy has one thing over Alfred, and that's money, right? So she finds out that he is giving money to Vicky. And, you know, while she will put up with the little dalliances with the sex workers, the dominatrix, the whatever, this money going out is a whole nother story, which really cracked me up. So she's furious, and she finds out about that, and it was just like, Nope, nope, nope. She demands that Vicky gets cut off from everything. Now, the only way that she's been able to survive or make money is to marry these older men who would in turn take care of her, right?
Uh-huh.
Alfred tried the buy-off thing where he'd give her money and furs and stuff like that, which worked for him in the past. And this was not working. She really did bring the hammer down and said, that's it. You cut it off right now. So Vicky's stuck. She's by herself. She doesn't know what to do. So she realizes, I got to get back out there. And I guess I got to find me another rich man, another rich somebody to take care of me. So she starts dating one of these suitors. And this just makes my heart kind of happy, but kind of sad, is Cary Grant.
Aww.
Cary Grant.
Mm-hmm.
So they dated for a little while, and they wasn't going to happen, right? Alfred kind of caught wind of that, and he might not be able to have Vicky right now, but no way is Cary Grant going to have him, right?
Right.
So he was just like, this is not going to happen. I have to have her back. So he kind of wormed his way back in there. And about this point, it starts to become totally apparent that it's more than money for Vicky, and it's more than sex for him, right? Like,
right.
They are starting to, they have a bond, and I think they genuinely did.
They cared for each other. I think after you're with somebody for so long, even just for sex, you care about that person. You might not be in love with that person, but you do love them.
Yeah. You know what, reading the things that I did read, and I think she really did love him, and it might have been, I don't know. Well, you'll see when we get to the
end. A little Stockholm-ish.
It's sad, but it's... No, and I think she genuinely, they might not be the prettiest person to look at, but when they're sweet to you, you do start to have some connection with them, you know? I mean,
well,
that's why I'm friends
with you. Just saying, they've had so... Ha, you wish you were... You wish.
Took you a minute there.
Well, I was going to ignore it at first, but I didn't want to seem unemotional.
Emotionless.
Unemotional, yeah, or emotionless, whatever. I think that she was with him for so long that she started to care for him. It's just like Stockholm syndrome.
Not that she was
forced to be there, but kind of was forced with all the money.
Right.
She was tempted to be there. And being 17, 18 years old, not having a father, that's kind of what does it. Yeah.
As Alfred and Vicky are trying to kind of get back in with each other, right? And they're kind of realizing that it's more than that. It's kind of the stars aligned, how I like to say that all the time. But Betsy Bloomingdale makes a little faux pas, a little big faux pas. It's 1975, and Bloomingdale goes on vacation to Paris. Betsy, and this cracked me up, okay, rich people, I tell you. Betsy goes over to Paris, and she buys very expensive clothes, some of which are very expensive gowns, you know, these big fancy ball gowns and things like that. Well, like, she doesn't have the money to pay for this. She decides to falsify the paperwork, bringing them back to the States. Say, for instance, one of her gowns cost $3,800. She didn't want to pay the tax on that.
Oh,
so
yeah.
She claims she only paid $528 for the gown. What? So she was convicted of a felony for cheating customs. She was trying to cheat customs out of some money. And that just cracked me up because, like, really? You don't have the money to pay for that.
Well,
seriously.
How do you think people stay rich?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Betsy is consumed with dealing with all this unfortunate circumstances, this oops felony. And that's perfect because Alfred then is able to, you know, go back with Vicky, get back with Vicky, and he goes and he rents her yet another house above Sunset Boulevard, and he begins giving her $18,000 a month.
Wow.
Now, this was a long time ago, so that's a pretty good little stipend for just being his beck and call girl, right?
Mm-hmm. 18,000 is pretty, a month is pretty good now. So I'd take it.
With all this money, the houses, all the stuff that Bloomingdale is giving Vicky, it's really wearing on her. He has become extremely controlling, he is paying for everything. He just feels that he needs to know where she is. What are you doing? Who are you talking to? Like, he wants a play by play of every single, and I'm sure it's jealousy. He's getting up in age. She's getting older. She's getting smarter, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
She's feeling trapped in her house. She is so used to all of this. She knows she can't let go of it. I mean, she can't break up with him, right? She's trapped. She begins taking drugs to deal with this, which is always the wrong answer.
It is.
But she's trapped in her house. She can't go anywhere. What's she going to do? She's drinking a lot. She's taking drugs. She's just trying to handle all this, but she's very
Well, she's miserable.
Obviously. Yeah, she's losing control. It's whatever. So all of this is getting too much for Vicky to handle. She is losing control. She's taking drugs. She's taking a lot of drugs. She's drinking. She's drinking a lot. At this time, she is 27 years old. She does the smart thing. She decides to check herself into a mental health facility and drug care program, really is what it is. Because back then it would be called mental health, but it's more like drug rehab too.
And it was before the Betty Ford Clinic too.
This was 19. I don't know.
No. If it's in the 80s, I guess Betty.
Yeah, she's fallen down for a couple times in the 70s. I'm not laughing. Terrible.
So was her husband.
I just thought of Saturday Night Live. Gerald fell though.
No, he fell because he was drinking 3 martini lunches. He was drunk too.
Oh, I did not know that.
Okay. Yes, that's why.
Okay. She goes to Beverly Hills and she is going to be treated for drug and alcohol abuse and depression.
Mm-hmm.
While Vicky is in treatment, she meets a man by the name of Marvin Pencoast. Pencoast is a gay guy who becomes absolutely fascinated with Vicky. Vicky's beautiful. She's outgoing. She's connected. I mean, this is like, ooh, this is, and she's flashy. I mean, think about it. This is fun. Right. Mercedes, all those fancy clothes. And she's kind of connected, or so Marvin is led to kind of believe that, right? That's what he's thinking.
Oh, so when Vicky, real quick. Yeah. Betty Ford was opened in 1982.
Okay. When Vicky leaves rehab, she's a much stronger person. She has a much better outlook. She looks beautiful, better than she has in a long time. And Alfred Bloomingdale is thrilled to have her back to him and thrilled to have her back to her old self. And he has decided while she was in treatment that he has some new political aspirations and he knows Vicky can help him with those aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
It's always about him, isn't it? Always about him.
So this would be before 1980 because Reagan took office for president in the 80s. So
this was pre-Betty
Clinic.
Alfred Bloomingdale was actually really good friends with Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan. And Bloomingdale would become involved in something that would become known as the Kitchen Cabinet. What the Kitchen Cabinet was it was a bunch of rich white guys from California, and they were on a mission to get Ronald Reagan elected president, which we know actually happened. So there you go. Vicky would often accompany Alfred Bloomingdale on these plane trips in and around the United States campaigning for Ronald Reagan. In fact, and I found this so weird, he would require her to stay 3 floors below or above he and Betsy.
It is odd that it would be specifically 3 floors unless they had something to do with not running into each other. But
yeah, I guess. The Bloomingdales and the Reagans and some other guys were traveling around the United States hoping to get Reagan nominated at this time. But some bad news would soon follow them. Alfred Bloomingdale is diagnosed with throat cancer and he is admitted to the UCLA hospital and he undergoes emergency surgery for the cancer. After the surgery, Bloomingdale's prognosis was terminal. Now, Vicky stayed by his side almost every day at the hospital when she could get to see him when Betsy or his other family wasn't there. But she was honestly with him more than anybody else.
You know how you get throat cancer, right?
Smoking.
Uh-huh.
On Alfred Bloomingdale's deathbed, he signs a letter detailing that Vicky Morgan should and will receive $10,000 a month after his passing, and she would get that for life.
Wow. She dropped out.
Unfortunately.
She was getting $18,000 a month. Now she's only getting $10,000.
For life, though. But, I mean, you got to realize, though, this is for life. So she could go get married and have a family or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately for Vicky, Betsy Bloomingdale finds out about this agreement, this letter that he would sign, and she's like, oh, hell no. Uh-uh. Betsy goes to the accountants and she demands that not one more red cent will ever go to Vicky Morgan. Betsy was successful in cutting off all the finances to Vicky Morgan. And I guess she didn't quite understand what was going to happen because, you know, Vicky Morgan had been, this is all she's known. She's never had a job. Mm-hmm. She's always been unemployed to be employed by Alfred Bloomingdale, essentially, right? So if you have to be ready to go when I need you to go. So you got to be where you need to be, whatever. So Vicky Morgan is like, oh, hell no. And she goes and she retaliates by filing a $5 million palimony suit. So, Jen, you know about that palimony suit, right? Who was the first actor? It was a big deal in California, right? Yep. It was the first thing. So it used to be alimony, but when they weren't married, then it became pal, as in friends, palimony. And it was?
Actor Lee Marvin.
Lee Marvin. That was a huge deal. I remember my parents talking about that back in the day.
That was the Pasadena case, Marvin versus Marvin. There you go.
On August 23rd, 1982, Alfred Bloomingdale died. Yikes. At this point, the palimony money suit had died and was going nowhere. It was just, you know, she was fighting it. Vicky was fighting it. It was terrible. So out of desperation, and here's some interesting little things that we need to think about. Out of desperation, Vicky decides, hey, you know what? I need that money. You're not going to give it to me. I'm going to write a tell-all book about everything that happened between Alfred Bloomingdale and I, but also many of the secrets I know about the Hollywood power elite. And this goes with the political connection she had through Alfred. And, you know, she was kind of a, she partook in a lot of
questionable things. Activities with a lot there of high-powered men.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I would think this would be comparable to maybe Jeffrey Epstein, you know, like knowing
without
things about
the
people.
Children, right.
Yes, yeah. But I mean, like knowing, connected to a lot of people, and it would bring a lot of harm about, right?
Especially for somebody running for president at that time.
This threat obviously angered a lot of people, including Betsy Bloomingdale and all these powerful people that Ronald Reagan had in his kitchen cabinet, all his good friends. So they could not and they would not allow this to happen. It couldn't happen. Well, she's desperate. You know, she's running out of money and she's running out fast. She sells her Mercedes Benz. She pawns off all the jewelry that Bloomingdale had given her, and she still can't do anything. She can't afford to stay in the house, so she has to move to a small apartment in Studio City. The horror, if
Poor
you knew
baby.
Studio City.
Well,
versus
you know what? She's she has the only thing that she has that is worth money are her secrets. So she has to do what she's got to do.
And here we go. Vicky Morgan is beside herself. She can barely get out of bed. She has no money. She has no way of making any money. And, you know, she had become accustomed to that very sweet lifestyle. One of the few friends that she had on this earth was the man that she had met in rehab, Marvin Pencoast, if you remember him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Pencoast comes around. He runs around with her a lot. He runs errands for her. He does anything she asks. They become really tight. She's suffering, I mean, from depression and just, I guess, a kick in the life. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, she's not doing too well. So it was known to everybody that they were pretty good friends, and everybody more on his kind of friend side, because she was pretty much locked in her house, her apartment, rather, and just depressed and trying to figure out what to do.
And they were platonic friends, correct?
Yes, he was gay.
Right.
So, and that's why I said earlier, so, because she was gorgeous, and, you know, that's why that's relevant. It was shortly after this time that Marvin Pencoast would step into a local police station, and he said, "You're going to have to arrest me. I just killed Vicky Morgan." Now, it's not very often that you have people go in and confess to things like this, right?
Not at all, right.
Pencoast goes on to inform police that he had killed Vicky Morgan with a baseball bat. Because he just couldn't take it anymore. He couldn't take her complaining. He couldn't take her worrying. He couldn't stand to listen to her anymore. And that day, she was about to be evicted from her Studio City apartment. And that would be the day that he murdered her.
Oh, what a short, horrible life. No,
right?
I mean,
no,
well,
I know it's not.
Yeah. She deserved so much better.
She had some highs and some lows. Let's put it that way, right?
Well, but even the highs were kind of low, if you get it, you know?
Yeah, totally. Like, yeah, I mean, look, in the dark of night, and you think about that, it's got to be a little rough, right?
Mm-hmm.
It would turn out Vicky Morgan's death was a result of blunt force trauma to her skull. The murder weapon was a wooden bat. The left side of her skull was hit approximately 6 times, and death was immediate. Thank goodness for her.
Thank goodness, yeah.
A little thing to know about Marvin Pencoast was that he had a history of suicide attempts. He had suffered from depression. There was these kind of things in his background, but everyone that knew him said that they just could not believe that he would be capable of committing such a brutal murder. Mm-hmm. He was kind of a soft-spoken guy. He wouldn't really do that, right? And they were friends. They really were friends. He had never been violent to anyone other than himself with the suicide attempts. He signs a confession when he's in custody of the police officers. However, you know what's coming up here. Marvin Pancos later tells his attorney a much, much different story. Marvin Pancos would tell his attorney that he cared for Vicki Morgan very much, and there was nothing out there to prove otherwise. He states that he woke up in the morning and she was already dead, and he had assumed that he must have done it, that he must have killed her, and that he had to have blacked out. He recanted his confession.
So were they doing drugs that night? Is that right? Is that what was happening? Or they
there was a history of that. There was a history of that with them, remember, that I had mentioned earlier. So that was the given that he did that.
But there's only so much that you're like, she's dead next to me. I guess I did it.
He also suffers from mental health, right?
Well, I mean, obviously.
That's the idea.
But yeah, but still, I would just think that that would be the furthest from my mind that I wake up next to my best friend. I mean, I get the whole, she drives me crazy, that I'd probably bash the head in.
Yeah, me too. Yes, but, I get that too.
Yeah, but I don't think I'd immediately think that I did it. I don't know.
Well, it gets weirder, Jen. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
So just when you think the case can't get any stranger, it's just a little odd, a little like, say, what? Kind of that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
4 days after Vicki Morgan's death, a high-profile attorney in Los Angeles came forward with a statement. He's got something to say, Jen.
Huh, okay.
Robert Steinberg comes out and says that he has been given sex tapes. Now, these aren't just any sex tapes, Jen. These are sex tapes with very high-profile officials. White House officials, that is, having sex. Now, I can only assume they're married or else this wouldn't be such a big deal. Steinberg goes on to say that the tapes were delivered to his office by a mysterious blonde.
I wonder who was blonde.
I don't know. Gee, I wonder.
Hmm.
Steinberg states that the tapes contained 40 minutes of Alfred Bloomingdale and Vicki Morgan, along with five other high-profile members of Ronald Reagan's cabinet.
Huh.
They were said to have been taped at the RNC, which is the Republican National Convention.
Right.
So that's pretty juicy. That's juicy today. Back then, that would be like show-stopping. Dun, dun, dun.
If those tapes would ever come out. Yeah, it would be huge.
Well, I'm glad you say that about them coming out, because just listen.
Okay.
The theory is now arisen, shall we say, that Vicki Morgan had these tapes and she was about to reveal them to the public. These tapes with all these high profile politicians who were having sex with other women, younger women, or men. Exactly.
And anybody but their wife, because remember, family values.
So was she murdered in an attempt to not have those tapes ever see the light of day? Was Marvin Pancos just a patsy for an unnamed politician who set him up to take the fall for Vicki Morgan's murder? Was he paid off?
Question mark. To kill her?
Paid off to say he killed her. Oh. I don't think he had it in him to kill him.
Yeah, I don't.
The authorities talked to some of Vicki Morgan's neighbors in that apartment complex, and they mentioned seeing a few men, you ready, walking out of her apartment after her murder carrying boxes.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
It was like a murder mystery. I mean,
a conspiracy theory.
Espionage, yes.
It's a conspiracy, yeah.
The authorities go to Mr. Steinberg. Now, he's the attorney. They go to the Steinberg's office, and they demand that he turn over those sex tapes. We want to see those sex tapes. We want to see them now, because it's all starting to maybe come together, right?
Right.
As if the sex tapes appearing to him weren't shocking enough, well, it's about to get even more shocking.
Oh, they
Steinberg
disappear.
Steinberg tells officers that the tapes were stolen from his office, and he was no longer in possession of them. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he had reported the robbery to police and had made a report. So there was a record of it, right?
Mm-hmm. So, well, he either was told to say that there was a robbery
report it. So there's that. Not that that means anything, but I'm just saying that it was on the record.
Mm-hmm.
Now with the tapes gone, no one was even sure if the tapes even existed, mind you. All of this is now going to make Melvin Pinkost's trial even more difficult. June 1984. So Pinkost, he had said he did it just because he was in a blackout. Then when he gained his composure, I guess, he said, no, I did not do that. And in fact, she was going to release all this information, right? So he's saying that that's now his lawyer's saying that that's why she was killed, right? But now the tapes have disappeared, which would have helped him.
Right.
So June 1984, the trial for Pinkost begins. And it is, as you can imagine, a media sensation. The defense are desperate to find something, but it's what they don't find that's even more shocking. The police failed to take and find fingerprints, right, on that bat.
Oh.
They failed to take, yes, they failed to take anything, blood, fingerprints, anything off that bat that was used to kill Vicki Morgan.
Do you think they forgot to do it because they had a confession? So they didn't do it?
That's exactly right. Since police say that he confessed, they failed to run a standard investigation on the scene. But I don't, that cannot be, you still have to do that.
No.
But you just have to. This is California, though. This isn't a little podunk town, you know?
But still, if people think that they've got a smash stunk case and the guy's going to plead not guilty or guilty, they don't have to. It's really stupid, but they don't have to do it.
On July 5th, 1984, after only 4.5 hours of deliberation, a verdict was reached. Marvin Pinkost was found guilty of first-degree murder of Vicki Morgan, and he was sentenced to 25 years to life.
Oh, Jesus.
I think that's a little shocking, right?
Yeah.
He said it, but then he did. But how many times do people, and if he was a drug addict and he had mental health issues and that, I don't, in the shock of your friend being murdered in your house by you, I don't know. I don't know. So the question is, Jen, did Marvin Pinkost, a man who befriended Vicki Morgan in rehab, murder her? Or did a person with far more to lose murder Vicki Morgan? What do you think?
I am
Talk amongst yourself.
I am not a big conspiracy theorist, but one thing I will tell you, I do believe Jeffrey Epstein did not kill himself. And I do not believe that Pinkost killed Vicki. Vicki was killed for other reasons, not just because she was annoying to her friend.
Okay, to close this out and to wrap it all up.
Mm-hmm.
In an almost unfair twist of the story, approximately a year after Vicki Morgan was murdered, she is granted a portion of that palimony suit that she had filed. And all those years they had fought about it, right? She was finally given it. It was decided that the arrangement was, in fact, a business arrangement between Vicki Morgan and Alfred Bloomingdale, and that Bloomingdale did promise her money for that arrangement. It was business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Morgan was granted $200,000, but she was dead, so
Todd
nobody
Morgan?
Got it. No,
Todd
the baby
Morgan?
Didn't get it. Mm-mm.
God, poor thing.
And finally, the sex tapes have never been located.
Mm-mm.
But
I'd love
they
to see them. I don't know. Ooh.
I don't know if I would. I'd like to know about them. Well, who am I kidding? I would love to see them.
Oh, yeah.
God.
Yeah. See who's on there. Yeah. Because you have to remember that the whole thing about Ronald Reagan and his whole platform was family, bringing the quintessential. They wanted to bring that America
family
back to
first.
That wholesome era. So if it would be anybody on his cabinet found with hookers and blow and any kind of thing that would have been devastating.
Yeah, it really would have.
Yeah, so
I agree.
Yeah, Vicki was her life meant nothing because theirs were more important, I'm sure.
Well,
so says them.
Yeah, exactly. I was just gonna say that, and I think, and I don't know how many times I've said this, and I forget who I say it to, but House of Cards. If you watch House of Cards, like, and I know that creepy creeperson's in it, but before when I watched it, he was a perfect Frank Underwood, FU, right? But in that show, I learned, for real, if they want you, if they want to get you, if they want to take you out, see ya, bye-bye.
Right.
You're out. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like, it started getting me thinking about how easy it would be to get rid of people, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, seriously. I
Or even ruin them in their life, right?
Mm-hmm.
I got most of the information from this book. Well, I found some articles and stuff, and then I found this book. And I'll put it in the show notes. It's Beautiful Bad Girl. There we go. And it was interesting. But then I'm not going to get into this. I just started to realize that maybe the author of the book might have been a little too close to it, shall we say, to write the book. Okay. We'll leave it at that.
But. Yeah. His name is Gordon Baskis.
Bashirs.
B-A-S-I-C-H-I-S.
I said all this in the first time we did this episode, but yeah.
Yeah.
Someone hit a wrong button and 5 hours later there was nothing.
I did not hit any buttons.
Mm-hmm. No, I know because you hit two buttons.
How do I hit two buttons at once?
Well, I hope that was a good show for you, Jen. And so remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. Nobody puts baby in the corner, but you're already in the corner, so that works.
Is that where you are? You weren't. You were in the middle of the thing.
Norwich, England? I love Norwich, England. It's my favorite.
I know that we don't speak correctly all the time, so I apologize. And Norwich, England?
Oh.
Is, I believe, how you would say that?
Did you see my Twitter post? Norwich. I don't know. Did you see my Twitter post today?
No, I did not.
I went to Starbucks and they asked, and I ordered my girls the drinks that they wanted, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they asked me what size I wanted, and I said I wanted a verde.
Well, that's green. I know. Spanish, so I'll take a green.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, instead of a verde.
I always just say small, medium, large.
My daughter was so thrilled with
embarrassed.
That.
Embarrassed. She's embarrassed. It's
and,
okay. It
and
happens.
So what I said was, just go clean your room when we get home. Yeah.
Nothing shuts them up quicker than that.
Go clean your room. Yep. Exactly. All right. Yeah, I think it's Norwich. Norwich?
It's England. But the point is that Constance actually kind of...
I was thinking like it was a ghost of an American airman or something like that.
Did you have to bring it up? I Dodge. Know. You know what I want to have? Dodge. Dodge, call me. Call me from Arlen. Long story. Anyway. Getting sidetracked here, Jen. Okay, so
Colorado or Colorado?
Well, I wrote it Colorado. Do you want me to say it for real? Colorado.
Colorado.
They would end up in Colorado. Who's
is that a
that?
Private school? Is it a private place in? Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear my cat?
I can.
Can you really hear it crying?
I can.
I can't let it in here because then I have like a circus in here. Oh my God. Sorry. Okay.
Can you take the cat out of the room completely?
Then because my closet backs up to the door, then you hear that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, maybe Nico can get that taken out. If not, we'll just have him. Is that Bessie?
No. Bessie's sweet. She didn't cry like that. That's asshole. Okay, somebody just opened the door, so I think they let the cat out or in. So the cat could have been outside crying to get in, and that's what you heard.
Yeah.
But I had the cat in here, but a while ago, Mike opened the door, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whatevs. Hold on. I hate that cat.
Get out! Out!
She hates the cat, Nico. But if it's Buster, yeah, I hate it too. It's evil as fuck. But, you know... What can you do?
God damn it.
Every time you touch your microphone, to me, it sounds like you are playing a ukulele very badly.
Sorry. Okay, is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, so that cat was just squawking out there just because it chased off Bessie. Because he's mean and
he
thought was fighting her. If you heard that. And then he's out there just, and he'll be here screaming at the, because I kicked him out. He'll be at the door screaming here in a minute. Let me just make sure this is recording because, you know, yep, it is. Okay, good. All right, here we go. So he gets ready to leave. But
okay,
upon...
quit saying whatever, and you know.
I'm sorry. I'm not used. I'm changing this as I'm reading
right,
it because
right.
It's...
No, I know, but you're like, oh, you know, and then whatever. Yeah, that's the name of our podcast or what it should be. But I'm just.
Okay. I'm gonna redo that. No. I'm gonna redo it right there. So
no, you're fine with that. The last part was just whatever. You're fine. Just from now on. You got a Coke problem again, Camille? You keep rubbing your nose.
No, I'm my mouth is like I don't have any water or anything in here.
Gotcha.
Sorry. Can you say, does it sound like I'm, because I feel like my mouth is like.
You know? No, but you keep like rubbing your nose and stuff, and it reminds me of when you had that really bad Coke habit.
No, but you're funny. But that, never mind. I won't even say that. Okay.
Well, she's miserable.
Obviously. Yeah, she's losing control. It's whatever. At this time, I'm sorry. I said whatever. I didn't mean to. But I'm used to talking to you and being like, you know what I mean? Like
oh,
that,
I know.
Right
yeah.
there.
No, I get it. And yeah, that's what Steve would always like.
I forget
laugh
that
at
not everybody else knows what we're talking about all the
I know.
Time.
I know.
Okay. I got up at 3:30 today.
At least you get to sleep.
Palimony. I got up at 3:30, Jen. You could sleep. We've already talked about that. That's the only way I sleep. And those tapes with all these high profile politicians.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vane. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.